You are about to enjoy a production of the Ella Wellness Network. This is Wellness Fixes the Pod. I'm your host, Dr. Kelsey Vick, and I'm so happy you're here. Welcome to the Wellness Sisterhood. Did you know that something as simple as viewing sunlight within the first few moments after waking can help you reach your body composition, aesthetic, and toning goals that much quicker? The body is totally magical, and today we're going to continue our series and talk about why. My name's Kelsey. I'm a board-certified doctor of physical therapy in orthopedics and then also a pelvic floor physical therapist and the owner of the Ella Wellness Sisterhood, and we've been doing a series on metabolism, glucose regulation, and why the body is so magical in relation to these processes. So the first few segments, we've covered two. We've covered mental clarity walks and how movement can help glucose regulation. And then we've also covered how the way we fuel and the order in which we eat our foods can help our glucose regulation and metabolism. And these are totally, like, to me, just super cool examples of how the body is truly magical and how we have these built-in pathways to help us maintain a relative level of homeostasis. But when that level gets out of whack, that's when things like obesity, diabetes, high blood pressure, all of these sort of things start to affect us more and more, lead to chronic inflammation, and then sort of perpetuate this cycle. And so this series to me is something that is super fun to dive into. And there's so many things that affect metabolism and how we manage our blood glucose levels. So we'll run over sort of an overview of blood glucose. We've done this probably every episode. So if you want to check out our hot girl walk episode and then our fueling, like metabolism, blood glucose, like the way in which we eat our food episodes, those are previous. The blood glucose fueling one is episode 12. And then the hot girl walk one is maybe a few episodes back. I'm forgetting the exact number, but I'll link them in the show notes for you guys. But in general, if this is the first episode you're joining us for in relation to this series, we talk about glucose metabolism and maintaining relatively stable blood glucose levels in order to help our body composition goals, our aesthetic goals, bloating, like fat deposition, just all of these things that when our blood glucose spikes become too high, they can affect that those sort of processes, right? So they can affect our body composition. We might lean more towards fat deposition. It might affect how our body is handling like oxidative stress on the mitochondria. It might lead to chronic inflammation. So this is what these sort of repetitive heightened glucose spikes can do to our bodies. And so our goal with this series is sort of learn what we can do to help manage those spikes in order to help us reach our goals that much quicker. So a little bit of a brief overview. When we eat, especially carbohydrates, our body breaks those carbohydrates down into glucose molecules. Step one, after they are digested and then absorbed in the body, glucose molecules, we use them immediately for energy. We store them in the form of glycogen for short-term storage, or we store them in the form of triglycerides in adipose tissue. So we have three ways to sort of use these glucose molecules. If we eat a heavy carbohydrate meal, that spike, we're super efficient at breaking those carbohydrate molecules down into glucose. And so that spike is extra high. And so our body has to get rid of it in whatever way possible. So what we really want to do is we want to lengthen out that spike and control that glucose release over time into the bloodstream, which is helped by moving immediately after eating, because when we move, we utilize that glucose immediately. And it's also helped by no naked carbs, right? So dressing our carbs with things like proteins, fats, and fiber can also help slow that blood glucose elevation after a meal specifically. And we have hormones like insulin that helps to cue our body on ways to utilize that glucose or store that glucose. And then we have things like glucagon that can help sort of give our body a cue to mobilize glucose if we ever are like low energy or we are needing glucose for high intensity interval training or running from the bear or different things where we need that glucose. So we have hormonal control over the system, and then we also have what we eat, movement, stress, environmental toxins, sleep, light, all of these different contributors in order to affect to manage that system. So we've been going over the movement component, we've gone over the fueling component. Today we're going to go over the light component and the sleep component, two that I feel like are very, very linked and two that can heavily affect our body's ability to handle that blood glucose management, our metabolism, and then that spike too. So we'll start off with lights. So in general, our body runs on a circadian rhythm, right? We've all heard of our biological clocks where we wake up, we have different hormonal releases throughout the day, throughout the times of the month, especially for us women. And then we have different things that happen throughout the day that help us to wind down at night. And throughout the day, we have different release of these hormones to help us digest food, metabolize food, mobilize glucose for energy, depending on what we do throughout the day. And so our body exists on this natural sort of rhythm. And the way that our body senses on how to time that rhythm, like how do we know when we need to release that insulin in order to help manage those glucose levels? How do we know when our body needs to cue that sleep pattern? And that's through light and darkness, right? So our eyes have photoreceptors in them that help to sense light, and that helps to cue our circadian rhythms. And so in the same way, the absence of light also helps to cue our circadian rhythms that it's time to sort of switch processes. And so we alternate between sort of light and dark in order to time our circadian rhythms for our body. And so it's super cool that our eyes have this direct contact to our brain in order to help systemically cue the processes in the rest of our body. I think that's super duper cool. And so we all knew we had these circadian rhythms, but we might not have necessarily thought, like, how does our body actually time that, right? And it's through these photoreceptors that are in our eyes that help to cue a part of our brain called the suprachiasmatic nucleus, so SCN, suprachiasmatic nucleus, and that helps to send signals to different parts of the brain to release different hormones throughout the day in order to help us with digestion, glucose metabolism, sleep, and all of these different things. And so you can imagine that if our body is sensing true light and true darkness without sort of blue light, phone screens, artificial light, the overhead lights, we're in a better rhythm to help regulate our metabolism because, again, those photoreceptors sense that light, sends the signal to the suprachiasmatic nucleus, which is sort of a control center to cue the hypothalamus to be like, hey, this is the time we need to send the signal to release insulin because she just ate a meal and we have to like manage that those glucose levels and manage that metabolism for her. Or, hey, I'm noticing a lack of light. I'm noticing this delta between the amount of light I'm sensing and not, right? So I'm sensing more darkness basically, which helps to cue our bodies through the brain that we're more gearing up towards sleep processes. And so with true light, our body's able to healthily regulate these processes. And then same thing with true darkness, our body is also able to help regulate these true processes. And so with true morning sunlight, we have a better metabolism. We're able to control inflammation. We're able to sort of set our bodies up in order to release the right hormones at the right time in order to help our metabolism. All of these different things in order to utilize that glucose for immediate energy or for storage, whether that's short-term in the form of glycogen or long-term in the form of triglycerides. So with true light exposure, our body is able to regulate these processes appropriately and true light exposure at the right periods of time in the day, right? So if we were getting this light exposure at midnight consistently, our body would start to sort of be a little bit more confused on like, hey, you're getting this light sense, but I'm also sensing dark outside, and that's where the confusion happens. So we'll talk about that later too. But with true darkness, that helps us to sort of wind down and cue some of that nervous system for that rest, digest, that recovery. And it helps us to more gear our processes towards sleep and sort of energy saving mode rather than energy utilization mode throughout the day. So if we have something like artificial light in our eyes, it can, especially if it's this, right? Our photoreceptors are right in our eyes. And so if we're sensing this light, even though it's 10 p.m. outside and it's dark, our body is going to get confused on how we can actually regulate all of the processes that happen in the brain that help cue the rest of our body for all of the different processes throughout the day. And so with false sunlight, bright light, or a lack of darkness, so we need light and dark. I listened to a podcast. I think it was Godfather Huberman's podcast, but he had a scientist on there who was saying, we focus so much on light, but really darkness is equally as important. We need the contrast between the two, because a lot of these cellular like photoreceptors and clock cells respond to changes within the two, or a concentration difference between the lightness, like the light that it's sensing in the dark. And so it's really a delta. We wouldn't know we were having light unless there was also dark. And so they're both equally important. And so if we go true morning sunlight and true darkness, the things that can sort of affect our processes and the ability for the body to sense true light and true darkness revolves around artificial light, bright light, blue light, and then false darkness too. So blackout curtains in the middle of the day, or phone light in the middle of the night, you know, all of these things are sort of conflicting, giving our brains conflicting evidence on what's going on in our external environments that can help, that is going to affect how our brain perceives those signals and then also sends the message to the rest of the body on what to do. And so with false sunlight, meaning bright light, artificial light, or with false darkness, meaning something like blackout curtains or limiting sunlight for an extended period of time, our metabolism is negatively affected. Our mood is negatively affected. We have poor glucose regulation, obesity, hypertension, so high blood pressure. We have just poor management of our overall metabolism, our overall mood, inflammation in general. And so it's super important that we learn to sort of structure our day and be more mindful of the light that we're getting and the darkness that we're getting, and making sure we're getting those at the right times of the day. And so I know Godfather Huberman always says this, but getting morning sunlight is truly, truly important for regulating all of these different processes, not just regulating sleep. So if we have too much bright light exposure at night or too much blue light exposure at night, this can impact the regulation of our entire body, because again, these photoreceptors, we're looking at that phone, we're looking at the artificial bright light, all these lamps are on in our house at super dark periods of the night, we're getting these false signals that are signaling to that suprachiasmatic nucleus, like, hey, I think it's actually light outside. And that starts to cue the processes that are more for wakeful times rather than for sleep. So even after one night of too much artificial bright light, our glucose and metabolism will be significantly affected. And so it shows that it's not just, of course, chronically, that's going to be even worse. So if we do this chronically, so, you know, multiple nights a week, multiple days in a row, it's going to be that much worse. But even after one night of too much bright light exposure, both our metabolism and our glucose, sort of blood glucose regulation, will be negatively affected. And then they've looked at whether or not like bright light in the morning or bright light at night is worse. And they found that bright light at night is actually worse, likely because it's like our body senses that darkness and it's not quite ready to, like, it's more winding down, versus if we have it in the morning, still not great, especially if you haven't gotten that natural sunlight yet. But it's likely that our bodies are already starting to signal that wakefulness. And so it adds it a little earlier than it would be, but it's still not necessarily as bad as doing that bright light or artificial light at night. And so I know I'm like super guilty of this. I'm preaching all of this to the choir, as they say, right? Where I need all of this information too. And I need to be more mindful of how I'm incorporating phone usage, computer work usage, like laptop usage, even lights on at the end of the evening. I've started like showering, trying to shower in the evening with like one light on that's super dim, just so I can keep limiting the amount of light that my eyes are exposed to when it's dark outside and when my body's supposed to be winding down. And so even if you're struggling with things like insomnia or poor sleep, getting that morning sunlight is actually one of the most important things for our bodies, because that's the thing that sort of helps to cue that rhythm. Even though it's nowhere near close to night, right? Morning sunlight, not that close to night. We don't necessarily think of that as sleep. It is still that like cue to start that circadian rhythm. And that's still the way that our body senses how we're supposed to have those varying hormone releases and neurotransmitter releases throughout the day. So I'm just as guilty of this. Like, I am educating, but I'm also preaching to myself, because this is something that I majorly struggle with. My schedule right now with seeing patients, I have to wake up before sunlight, and I'm oftentimes like working well into the darkness. And so I wish that, and my goal is to sort of have a better regulation on that, especially because I do think that if you're struggling with those last little bit of that, your body composition goals, your aesthetic goals, your like bloating, your inflammation, whatever, I do feel like it's these little habits that you're like, oh, I know I'm not supposed to be on my phone in the dark. Oh, I know I'm not supposed to be looking at my phone first thing in the morning. But I really do think that all of these little things can contribute to each other. It's not this one major thing, this one exercise change, this one diet change, this one fueling change, this getting 9 hours of sleep or whatever. Although all of those things are important, I do feel like if you're struggling reaching those last little bit of your goals, or feeling that last little bit, like I feel the best I ever have in my body, in my mind, I do think that it can come down to something as simple as phone use, bright light, artificial light. Or if you're on the opposite side of the spectrum where you're like, I spend way too much time in a dark environment, I'm a radiologist or a radiologist tech, I'm always in a dark space without a lot of windows, whatever it is, I feel like being more attuned to this system in our bodies can super help, and in our environments can help us sort of better manage and better regulate our own metabolism in a healthy and natural way. And so in addition to light, I felt like combining these two topics was beneficial, because we also have sleep. And so we've talked a little bit about this, but sleep and light sort of both feed into each other. I mentioned if you get morning sunlight in the morning, it can better help you sleep at night, assuming that you have this sort of consistent sleep-wake schedule where that morning sunlight cues the right hormonal responses throughout the body, throughout the day, digestion, energy usage, exercise, movement, all of that, and then cues it into sleep at night because it starts that sort of circadian rhythm. And so they feed into each other, but with proper sleep, we can expect similar benefits as with proper light exposure. So good metabolism, better glucose regulation, repair, which again, if you guys missed our glymphatic episode, we talk about all of the repair processes and the importance of sleep in regards to our brain health. But all over our body, sleep is the time where our body is sort of mending and repairing. I picture these sort of little cellular workers that are just going to town and like getting rid of the clutter in my brain and my body, cleaning up some of the muscles, and especially repairing some of the muscles that I've utilized, especially if you do some of the strength training workouts or do any sort of workouts where your body is naturally sort of breaking down those muscles in order to build it back up. Sleep is a time for repair and time for rebuilding. And so proper sleep can help with all of those things. So on the flip side, poor sleep and lack of sleep can lead to things like inflammation and oxidative stress on the mitochondria. It can lead to poor glucose clearance, which can cause things like obesity and diabetes. So with those sustained glucose levels, again, our body is going to rely more on those long-term storage solutions, and then our body is going to become less sensitive to the signal of insulin, meaning it's going to have more difficulty clearing out that glucose and using it immediately or storing it for short-term or long-term usage. So we also have poorer brain clearing, and I had to add this on here because we did talk about the glymphatic system, which is super duper important. And again, another great episode to listen to on sleep. We have poor recovery and repair, not just in regards to our brain or our metabolism, but also in regards to our muscle tissue, our skeletal muscle, all of it. We also have increased hormonal levels, so increased cortisol, which can make cells less responsive to the cues of insulin. And insulin that we want our cells to be responsive to, because that helps us to get rid of the glucose that is in our bloodstream and use it or manage it in a healthy way. We also have elevated hunger hormones like ghrelin. So with poor sleep, it's been shown that those hormones are elevated. And so we might be eating more throughout the day or wanting to veer more towards sweet tasting foods throughout the day, things like carbohydrates. And then it'll also lead to poor sleep can also lead to an elevated sympathetic tone. And again, we want sympathetic tone is that fight or flight nervous system. That parasympathetic is that rest and digest. And so in general, we want an uptick in that parasympathetic response at night compared to that sympathetic nervous system. We want that more for the day. And again, there's fluctuations throughout the day. With digestion, we want that parasympathetic elevated. With movement, we want that sympathetic. So there are fluctuations throughout the day. But in general, an increased sympathetic tone within reason is a good thing. But chronic elevated levels of that sympathetic nervous system can lead to a lot of different, like, stress, like shallow breathing patterns, just a lot of different sort of like heightened responses in the body that will help us sort of fight the bear, right? Think of all of these fight or flight responses. Those will be higher once we have these sort of this sort of chronic lack of sleep and this chronic elevation of that sympathetic nervous system. And so a lot of these things are sort of like things we've heard, right? But there is a true brain connection, visual connection, and then a systemic response and how our body responds to these, such a simple thing as looking at our phone or delaying sleep for like 2 more hours because we're trying to finish a show. So it all sort of feeds into each other. And it's these really, I know for me, like sleep and light, like fueling is easy for me to think about. Movement is super easy for me to think about. It's these littler things like light, sleep, that I'm like, oh, you know, I can stay up. I can read a little bit more of this book. I can watch another episode. I can scroll a little more. I am working, so might as well like answer a few more emails. So it's just super easy for me to disregard these as ways to reach whatever wellness goals I have. And again, light and sleep both directly affect our metabolism and directly affect how our body is able to regulate all of these different processes throughout the day. And so I think it's something that I need to be way more attuned to. So, and again, I've kind of talked about some of the ways we can improve sleep in the glymphatic episode, so I'll link all of those. But what we can do, we can get morning sunlight. So letting those receptors in our eyes sense that morning sunlight in order to cue the right processes throughout the body at the right time. We can have consistent sleep and wake schedules, which that's super hard for me. We can avoid bright light and blue light in the evenings and then too early in the mornings, especially if we haven't viewed morning sunlight yet. We can do red light bulbs. This is something that I haven't done, but I would really love to do in my house, especially for evening, just to sort of like dim the lights a little bit more. That way there's not such bright lights when it's dark outside. And I know right now in Austin, we're getting like, I mean, the sunsets, I don't know, like 8:30 p.m., 9 p.m. Like it is pretty late, but still when I'm showering at night or when we're just hanging out at night, I would like to have sort of a dimmer environment and that is cueing my body into this sleep cycle, even if I'm still awake and not quite ready for bed. And then the other thing too, sufficient sleep, which is just self-explanatory, but I mentioned this in the glymphatic episode, but as soon as I got my Aura ring is like the best thing to track sleep that I found. Like I absolutely love it. And I haven't tried a Whoop, but I do love it. And I do feel like it's able to truly tell me when I fall asleep, because I would fall asleep or I would go to bed at 9:30 and have to be up by 5:30. And so in my head, I'm like, oh yeah, I'm getting my 8 hours. But in reality, I was falling asleep at like 10:30, 10:45 and waking up at 5:30. So I wasn't really getting the full amount of sleep that my body needed. And so by using something to track or giving yourself enough time to sort of fall asleep and stay asleep, I think that's super beneficial for helping our sleep. Because a lot of time if we're like, we need 8 hours, we need 9 hours, whatever it is, we try and go to bed, be in bed by that time. But if you're like me, you aren't really planning on that falling asleep time. But I think it's super important. And it's something that I have definitely tried to be better at, but it's still hard because I'm like, how long is it going to take me to fall asleep tonight? I don't know. So we'll try 30 minutes before. And if it's not then I get frustrated and it sort of perpetuates. So it's something that I'm always working on too. But I know this is all the like super duper boring stuff, but I think it's super duper important. And again, if you're struggling with reaching your health and wellness goals, whatever that might be, whether or not that is fat loss, muscle building, decreasing bloating, digestion, gut health, whatever it is, I do think it's these little sort of tweaks that we can make. And all of these are just behavioral. They're just ways that we can sort of change our environment and how we act within our environment and the times in which we do things in order to help our overall health and wellness goals. And so I needed this episode just as much as you guys, I hope, just as much of a reminder. But again, it's super duper important. And sometimes diving into the research does really help solidify it for me. I was talking to one of my cousins and she was like, if I know the why behind something, I'm that much more able to be compliant with it, which is exactly why I am sort of covering the science behind it in hopefully a very digestible way that's like, oh, that's right. There is a connection between my visual system and my brain that affects my entire body. And so what can I do to sort of optimize that? And I think by knowing the science behind it and knowing the underlying mechanisms, like I get super cellular with this stuff and I don't talk about it all on the podcast because I think some people find it super boring, but that's why I link a lot of the resources. That way, if you are interested, you can look at some of the research on your own. But I just think it helps me be that much more compliant if I'm able to understand the why behind the processes and why I'm doing things. And so I wanted to also update you guys, like if you're going through this sort of like the body is magical, like glucose regulation metabolism series with me, we covered movement, so our hot girl walks, and then we've also covered fueling. And so over the last probably 3 or 4 days, I've been super mindful of getting movement in after a meal in order to help my overall glucose utilization and level out those glucose spikes after a meal. And so if you listen to that episode, I highly recommend it if you haven't, but if you listen to it, you know that one of the recommendations was after a meal to take a quick movement snack, a quick movement break in order to help your body immediately use the glucose that it's breaking down in order to level out that spike. And so I've noticed I had like literally, it was so delicious, but we had like a homemade pizza with like a whipped ricotta and honey dip and naan bread. Like we had a lot of a carb heavy meal. But after that, I was like, okay, I'm feeling a little bit like full, but let me go on a walk. And it immediately helped decrease the amount of sort of like bloating and discomfort that I felt after that meal compared to just like going sitting on the couch and resting. And so that's one of my updates. If you guys tried it, I would love to hear some of your updates too. But that is a super positive thing for mine. The other thing, and I've already been doing this for probably the last 6 months, but before that sort of like pizza meal, before that non-bread, like carb heavy meal, I also paired it with boiled eggs, so protein and fats, and then also with a little bit more like salad and lettuce, so getting some of those veggies for fiber. And I will say, like, I think that also played into the improvements in how I felt after a super heavy meal. And so if you listen to the fueling episode or the glucose metabolism episode, I think that was episode 12, the one right before this, but it was all about how we can combine different foods and eat different foods in the right order to level out those glucose spikes. And I really do think that adding in that movement and adding in that protein, fats, and fiber to my heavy carbohydrate meal really helped how I was feeling after and the comfortability I felt in my body rather than feeling like I had to unbutton my pants or something because I was like so bloated and so uncomfortable. So I hope if you haven't tried it yet, or if you haven't listened to those episodes, go listen to them, try it out. I think it's super helpful. I'm going to try and be better about light and sleep this week, but I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. If you want more of a breakdown, it is in this month's blog post on the ellawellness.com website. If you're wanting to join the sisterhood where we have sort of workouts, nutrition, mindfulness strategies, all of these sorts of things that combine everything we're talking about here, please, I leave the link below. Please join our sisterhood. It's a 7-day free trial. If you want to try it out, see if it's even right for you. If you have any questions or any comments or anything that you're like, hey, my goals are this, is there a resource you can point me to, or is there something that the sisterhood can help out with? Please let me know. I'm building it for you guys, and I want this to help just as many women as possible. So thank you guys so, so very much for listening. If you liked this episode, if you found it beneficial, please share it. I would really appreciate it. And if you could follow along, if you're more of a video format girl or guy, whatever, sister or mister, check out YouTube. We post all of the actual in-person videos there if you're more of a visual learner. And again, I talk with my hands. So it is very sort of motion-based and I don't know, if you're a hand talker, you might really benefit from, or a visual learner, you might benefit from the YouTube version. So thank you guys so, so much for following along. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and I'll see you again on the next Wellness Big Sister podcast.